flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That is Crescent City by Lucinda Williams from truly one of my favorite albums. Called Lucinda Williams from the late 80s, and maybe my favorite city song of any kind, welcoming our friends from New Orleans in town today.
Our friends from New Orleans do not include Zion Williamson, who will not be playing tonight, and Brandon Ingram will not be playing tonight. This year has not gone the way the Pelicans would have wanted.
No, they're in sort of a weird spot with the Zion. The Ingram is he'll enter free agency this summer. I think he'll be somewhere else. If he's not traded at the trade deadline, which he probably won't be, he'll be somewhere else this summer. And so I think that is coming to an end. The Zion thing's a real trick for them because, like, he's good when he plays, but he never plays. And then there's always off-court stuff, too. And, like, I don't know. It just feels like they need to move on from that.
The Ingram thing's just interesting because he's not going to be traded because no one wants them to pay him the money, right? Like, he is, however good he is, he's not as good as he wants, wants to be paid, right?
It is an expiring contract. So. Right. The money thing, you got to match salary. But other than that, like, you trade for him, you're not on the hook for him beyond this season.
Right.
So if there's a team that thinks that, like, he can give them a real offensive boost down the stretch and in the playoffs, maybe you make that trade. The other thing is that the reason people don't want to pay him that money is because he's not good enough to match the money.
Right.
That's kind of the problem, right?
Yeah, he's just not as good as the money he makes now, certainly as the money he wanted to make. So when they were talking about all offseason about trading him. And at that point, like, there's no one who they've come to that conclusion about Brandon Ingram, and so has everybody else.
A team can want to trade a player, and a player can want to be traded, and that does not mean the player will be traded, right?
Yeah. So we do have injury issues. Jeffrey, what's the Grizzlies injury report? You said
Santi and Ja have been added as questionable for, as Chris pointed out, illness.
And then we got back-to-back, too. So what do you expect this weekend?
I don't know. I don't have any expectations. Right. Like, I can't judge how guys are going to feel. Like, if they're under the weather,
really?
I can't
What's
predict.
Wrong with
like,
you
know,
can't
what they're going to feel.
The
like
progress
time.
Of their flu. Yes.
You know, they're both questionable, and questionable means you're likely to play, not definite. It does happen. This season, Ja Morant recently was questionable on a game and didn't play. And so, like, you know, those are game time decision things, and we'll see how it goes. And I don't know. I mean.
I guess what I meant was this, is that you're also looking at a back-to-back situation. So if you're questionable already and you might not play in both.
That may lean you towards not playing and hoping they're better the next
time. If you wanted to see Ja Morant, if you had a 7-year-old who wanted to see Ja Morant and could get a ticket for tonight or tomorrow, is there a safer bet or is it total crapshoot?
Oh, tomorrow is probably safer, but you're venturing into the unknown on both.
Right.
There is that. You already know you're not seeing Zion, so it's kind of a bummer. Like, you know, when those guys got drafted, it was supposed to be. And I've written about this in the past. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. But, like, the number of times New Orleans and Memphis have played since that draft night and the number of times both have been on the floor, there's a big gap between those two numbers. It just hasn't
Has there ever been a classic tilt where they're both going at it, hammer and tong? Like,
there have been games where they both played, but I can't. Nothing springs to mind as remember that night.
No. Yeah. And when Zion played, he was great. Like when Zion plays, he's
a week
great.
Ago he played and he was good. You know, it's the kind of thing where one school of thought, and I tend to think this is the correct school of thought for New Orleans, is. Because there's some stuff about, you know, do you trade Zion at the deadline or whatever? And I agree the answer to that is no. But I think the rest of the season has to be about getting him on the court as much as you can and demonstrating what he can do and trying to sell higher in the summer.
I see.
I do think it's just you can't keep doing the Lucy Charlie Brown football routine. I think it's been damaging to the organization. And if they can get a top five pick, maybe get the number one pick, but the top five pick in this draft, I think you can just say, we're going to reset. We're rebuilding. We're trading Zion for whatever we can get. We're trading CJ McCollum. You know, maybe we trade DeJounte Murray, but we got this top five pick. We got Trey Murphy. We got Eves Missy. We got all the stuff we've gotten for the trade. We're rebuilding. We're starting over. I think that's what they need to do.
There's no way in this draft they could get the number one pick. Would you trade a top five pick?
Of course
in this
they
draft?
Could get the number one. Why couldn't they get the number one
pick? I thought you meant in a deal or something. Oh, you mean in the lottery?
No,
yes.
For themselves.
Yes.
They're
they
bad.
Could get Cooper Flagg. Yes,
they're
right?
bad. They could
oh,
easily
thought you
get the
meant
number
trade
one pick.
And get a number one. I thought that's yes. Yeah. They can 100% get it on their own demerits. I guess yes, 100%. So anyway, we got that tonight. We also have continuing saga of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Yesterday. Mark Spears said, you know, he's decided now he just wants to get the hell out of there, go really anywhere, except Memphis.
And there's two other things, I don't know if you've seen them sort of since then. That are so you got that, that's one sort of data point. There was a podcast last night that went up last night. It was Nate Duncan with Jake Fisher, who's sort of emerging as a pretty good NBA reporter, national newsbreaker guy. And they were just talking about trade deadline broadly. And when it came to Memphis, Fisher said, I really think the Memphis Jimmy Butler stuff has always been overblown. Memphis as a key player in the Jimmy Butler stuff has been overblown. And then I haven't seen or heard this myself. I've seen it secondhand. Apparently Brian Windhorst, either on a pod or maybe on a hit on ESPN somewhere, described the Grizzlies as a team lurking in the background in the Jimmy Butler thing, right? Now, it would sound like, and I've sort of interrupted your question. If you
no,
were
go ahead.
The Spears
That's
thing.
It.
At first blush, it might sound like the Jake Fisher thing, this is overblown, and the Brian Windhorst thing, they're lurking, or is incompatible. I actually think it's completely compatible.
right.
And it's just the way this stuff trickles out and the way it's tea leaf reading. And so my best, 3 weeks ago is when you had the thing where, I think it was 3 weeks ago, it feels like that, where it was, you know, the gambling sites have made the Grizzlies the favorite to land Jimmy Butler. Everyone freaked out. The Grizzlies are trying to trade for Jimmy Butler. This is happening. The Grizzlies are about to land Jimmy Butler.
Right.
I'm pretty confident that at that stage, the Grizzlies had not even made a trade offer for Jimmy Butler. Right. I think that stuff was invented out of like people trying to assemble pieces and figure out what was going on or what might happen. I don't think that stuff was based on anything at all. That was 3 weeks ago. Now, I'm certain the Grizzlies had internally discussed, is this something
should
we should?
Yeah, of course.
Because that's what they do every day about every player all over the league, right? So 3 weeks later, as this has continued to drag on, have the Grizzlies possibly like looked into it beyond their internal situation and said, you know, is this something that would work? Have they talked to Miami? I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they have. But I don't think, I don't have any sense the Grizzlies have like, tried to trade for Jimmy Butler, and B, the things that you can step back from all the tea leaves and just look at the substance of the situation, and the substance doesn't change. Jimmy Butler doesn't have to like enthusiastically say, I want to come to Memphis. You can't drag Jimmy Butler to Memphis on a team that's a top three seed in the West trying to win in the playoffs. And if he doesn't want to be here, they can't do that. And then two, even if they cleared that hurdle, and we've talked about this before, but it weren't. Every time it comes up, you need to restate it. Even if you clear that hurdle, you have to have some kind of common accord between the Grizzlies and Jimmy Butler about his contract future beyond this season, because he has a $52 million player option he can exercise next season that I don't think the Grizzlies want on their books. And so those are the two big hurdles. Now, are the Grizzlies lurking in the sense that, like, they're keeping their eye on this? Maybe they've talked to Miami a little bit. Maybe they've talked to other people and said, you know, would this work? Let's explore whether we can cross those hurdles. That wouldn't surprise me. But, like, at the same time, I feel like the whole conversation has been overblown because those two hurdles aren't going anywhere. Right.
And those two hurdles are sort of related. In other words, if he wanted to come here, he might be willing to make some sort of accord.
I would flip it the other way. The reason he doesn't want to come here is because it's not going to happen.
Well, that's the,
That is what this is about. He wants to get to Phoenix because Phoenix is going to pay him.
Right. That's the other question I was going to ask is that, do you think the reason that, to the extent that Mark Spears' reporting is correct, the one team he has identified. And, of course, as I said earlier, there's lots of teams he doesn't want to go to. They're just not being named because he doesn't want to go to Utah.
Well, there was a report earlier that Shams did this. He said that he's informed multiple teams, including Memphis. And as, but then there's a follow-up. When that report happened, Kevin O'Connor followed up and said, yes, I've heard he said the same thing about Milwaukee. You know?
Right.
And so the singling out Memphis thing does feel gratuitous. And like, I've lived in Memphis most of my life on and off, and so I know how Memphis is, not to generalize, but Memphis likes to badmouth itself, and then Memphis likes to get upset when other people on the outside badmouth, and I think both of those things are unhealthy. I think less of both would be healthier for the community. And so I'm sure that people who are, like, just on edge, like, someone said something bad about Memphis, light the pitchforks, it's Iguodala all over again. And so it feeds into that for some people, I'm sure. I think if Jimmy Butler doesn't want to come to Memphis, which I believe, it's because the Grizzlies are not going to open the bank and pay him what he wants to get paid.
Right. So there we are. Do you expect he will get moved, don't you?
I just think there's so many forces now pushing against this from multiple directions. I'm just sort of assuming they're going to figure out a deal to get him to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I think them breaking up that pick into multiple picks is sort of going to grease the wheels. And that would be my guess.
All right. All-Star Starters last night. You and Drew Hill did a pod, and people can listen to you all talking about this, among other things, over at the podcast in longer form. But in the West, LeBron, Steph, KD, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jokic were the starters. In the East, Brunson, Kat, Giannis, Mitchell, and Tatum. And so now let's look at the West. No one's surprised that Jaren wasn't included as a starter. We didn't think he would be.
Right.
But now you've got three front court players.
Two wild cards.
Two guards and two wild cards. Well, let's take the guards first just to deal with them. Who do you imagine the guards might be?
Well, Edwards will be one
of them.
That is certain. And the other one is really up for grabs.
Kyrie?
I think the two best players are Luka Doncic and Ja Morant. I believe those are the two best players of the rest of the guards.
Oh, right, yeah.
But they had the two best seasons. They missed a ton of games.
Right.
So I ended up reluctantly putting Kyrie when I did my team as the fourth guard. I would rather see Luka or Ja on that team because I just think they're better. And I don't know what's going to happen. But then you have guys like De'Aaron Fox and Devin Booker who are putting up good numbers.
Right.
They're on worse teams. I don't think they've been as good minute by minute when they play, but they're putting up big numbers and they played like all the games. And so Kyrie was my compromise pick there in terms of like who's been good and who's actually played.
Right. What's Jalen Williams?
I believe the NBA classifies him as a front court player.
Okay. So you've got three front court players and two wild cards, and you're just going to have to say off up front, AD and Wemby are two of the front court players, right?
Yes. It's really unfortunate that because LeBron should not be a starter in the All-Star game based upon his play this season, and you could argue Kevin Durant shouldn't either because he's missed a lot of games, but there they are. So yes, Davis and Wemby, I think you can lock
100%. So you've only got one more front court player, and you've got Sabonis, Sengun, Jalen Williams
and Jaren,
right. And then you've got two wild cards. So
yeah, so they can't all four make it. And
well, technically they could. I guess you could have. No, you couldn't. You couldn't. No,
you can't. You can't do all four. And I think you should do three. I used my wild card spot for front court, both of them. But it seems like that's probably not likely either.
Right.
And so it's a tough. There's a chance Jaren Jackson does not make the All-Star.
Two. So if you only use one of your wild cards there. And your other front court, you've got two of the four, Sabonis, Sengun, Jaren, and Jalen Williams. I think Sabonis makes it, don't you?
Well, if you look at who's got the gaudiest stat line, the answer is Domantas Sabonis. If you look at, like, you got to reward winning, Well, Oklahoma City's first and Houston's second. Memphis is third.
Right.
So both of those things sort of go against Jaren. But if you just say, like, who has actually been the best player, the answer is Jaren Jackson Jr. And I said this yesterday. If people weren't listening, I'll do it again. I did it on the pod. Jaren is the leading scorer on the fifth-ranked offense in the NBA, and he's the best defensive player, and it's not even remotely close. He's the best defensive player in the sixth-ranked defense. There's no one else in the conference who is at the top of the pecking order on offense and defense on teams that are having that much success on offense and defense.
And we say that because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not the best defensive player on that team.
He's
obviously.
Good, he's but good, he's not. But he's not yeah. Lou Dort's probably the best right. defensive player on that team.
So it's a – there's some real suspense here.
There is. There is. Jaren could miss the All-Star team, and frankly, he should be starting the All-Star game.
All right, so because we're here, let's look at the East very quickly. You got Brunson, Kat, Giannis, Mitchell, and Tatum. What do you think there?
Shout out to the media for putting LaMelo Ball like eighth or whatever among the guards when he led the vote.
He's got gaudy
when he
numbers.
He led the fan vote.
He's got gaudy numbers. So I've seen an argument that Darius Garland should have been starting as opposed to Donovan Mitchell.
That was my pick, but I think it's a coin flip. I don't think there's a wrong choice there. But my team, I had Garland and Brunson as the starters, and Mitchell's the third guard. I think those three should be locks. I don't know that Garland's a lock just because he is not the star that Trae Young and LaMelo Ball, and he's not the name brand that some of those guys are, Damian Lillard. But I think he should. To me, as with Jaren, like, he should be a no-brainer all-star, and he's probably not a no-brainer all-star.
Up front, you got Mobley, right? You got Cade Cunningham.
Are you talking about the reserves?
I'm talking about the reserves.
Mobley as a starter. I feel like the Mobley-Towns thing is a coin flip. I was a little surprised the media vote wasn't closer on that.
Uh-huh.
I got no problem with Towns, but I think that's a close call. I think Mobley should be a lock. I think Garland should be a lock. I think Cade Cunningham, I think, would classify as backcourt, I think.
I see, right. Yes, you would.
Would yeah, be
right,
a lock probably. For me, yeah.
Huh. All right, and then we got film stuff. We haven't talked about What's Up. You write a piece every single...
Oscar nominations came
out. And the Oscar nominations, I'm going to get that, too. It came out yesterday, yeah. So, but first, in terms of what's local, well, one of the things that's local...
Is one of the big Oscar nominations,
and that is The Brutalist.
Brutalist opens in Memphis today, I guess. The Brutalist is like 3.5 hours long.
It literally
has an intermission, like built into the film, so you can get up and go to the bathroom.
Who made The Brutalist?
It's a guy no one's ever heard of named Brady Corbett. It's like his second or third movie. He's a young director. The other movies did not get a lot of attention. It is a big, big swing. It's a Mark McGwire level. I'm going to try to smash this over the field swing. And I don't personally think it's a Mark McGwire level moonshot,
uh-huh.
but I do think he makes contact. It's not a swing and a miss. It is an attempt to make a great American movie, capital G, capital A, capital M. And I appreciate the boldness of it. To me, the first half, I've only seen it once. I saw it on my TV, like on a Sunday morning with a streaming link that was going to blow up in 4 hours. So I had no choice. So I have not seen it in the opportune best circumstances. I thought the first half was pretty great. I love the way it opens. The second half and the way it lands it, to me, kind of faltered a little bit. It's the kind of movie where I could see my opinion changing in either direction on a second viewing. I do plan to give it a second viewing, even though it's nearly 4 hours long. But it is one. There was no clear-cut front runner, if you care about the Oscar stuff, for Best Picture, I think. But there's like 4, 5, maybe 6 movies that could win Best Picture, and this is definitely one of them.
We talked about the other day, you were talking about some other movies where you said...
Adrian Brody starts it.
Well, you said about a movie, this isn't for everybody. And of course, you're acknowledging no movie's for everybody. But is The Brutalist a movie that is aimed at everybody, or is it a niche?
It's nearly 4 hours long. Right. I mean, it's a 4 hour long period piece. Adrian Brody, just to get a synopsis, it's set right after World War II. Adrian Brody is a notable Hungarian architect whose family, it's a little unclear whether they were in the camps or whatever, but basically they're fleeing. They survived the Holocaust in one way or another, and they're immigrating. They're fleeing to the United States. They're separated. He and his wife are separated. They're both alive. Yeah. They're both coming, but they're separated as the movie opens. And so he lands in America, like at Ellis Island or whatever, and gets off the boat and has to start a new life. And like no one cares that he was a renowned Hungarian architect. So now he's like, you know, washing dishes or whatever. And it's sort of it's the story of him making his way in a new country, and eventually he gets found or gets connected to this industrialist played by Guy Pearce, who becomes his benefactor as his architecture career restarts. And it's about immigration and assimilation. It's about architecture. It's about like art and commerce, like the artist and the capitalist benefactor, the relationship between the money and the work. There's a lot of big ideas at play. It's a really interesting movie. It's really going for it. I appreciate the effort. I don't think it's The Godfather, you know,
right.
But I think it's definitely worth seeing.
Of the others, so the nominees were Anora, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, and Wicked. I know you like Nickel Boys. I know you like, but not probably love, Conclave. And I know you like Anora and A Complete Unknown, right? You like all those, don't you?
Yeah, to different degrees. I like Dune 2 fine. I'm trying to remember what those were. The one I have not seen is I'm Still Here.
What is that?
It's a Brazilian movie that was a real big surprise as a nominee. Also got a Best Actress nominee. It's really a reflection of the voting body. It's become more international.
I see.
You go back to Parasite winning Best Picture a few years ago. Right. I haven't seen it yet. And so I had a chance to see it. I didn't prioritize it because it wasn't going to come to Memphis. And I just only had so many hours, you know, at my disposal. So I never saw that. Of the others, I think Wicked is bad. Like, it's a big hit, but like, bad. I think it's a real chore to set through for me. And I think Emilia Perez, which has the most nominations, is pretty bad.
What is it, Emilia Perez?
It's a movie. It's a Netflix. On Netflix, easy to see. Maybe that's part of why it's getting so many nominations, because everyone just turns on Netflix. Even people who vote for this stuff probably just turn it on Netflix.
Right.
It is a musical drama, original musical drama about and I'm not making any of this up, it's about a brutal drug cartel leader in Mexico who hires an attorney to help him get a sex change operation. And,
oh, of course it is.
And it's a
musical.
And it's a musical. And it seems like maybe it's trying to be like some metaphor for a changing Mexico or something, but it's made by a French filmmaker, and I think there's good stuff about it, but I think it's kind of a mess, and I think it's kind of bad, actually.
All right, so I'm going to guess your vote would go to Nickel Boys.
My vote would go to Anora. Anora was my favorite movie of last year. I think Anora is great. And Anora has a chance to win, but I doubt it. It seems like not the kind
of
movie
that you mentioned. As some of these have. Which would you think have a chance to win?
I think, not in any particular order, but Emilia Perez, The Brutalist, Anora, Conclave, A Complete Unknown, and maybe Wicked. That's a lot.
Wow,
but like Conclave seems like the kind of movie that wins an Oscar, you know? But I don't know if it does. Like, it could be Emilia Perez, which would be a bad
So outcome. The Brutalist is opening in Memphis this week.
You can see it on the IMAX, apparently.
Anything else particularly recently of interest in the scene?
There's still stuff hanging around. So a movie that did not get any nominations, I was disappointed. To me, the biggest quote-unquote snub of the whole thing was this woman, British actress, Marion Jean-Baptiste, who was not nominated for Best Actress for this Mike Leigh movie, Hard Truths, even though she won, like, a bazillion, like, critics awards, New York Film Critics Circle, all this stuff. She won Best Actress from all this stuff. It is a supernaturally good performance. The movie's really good, and it's still in Memphis, I think, you know, for another week. And so I recommend checking that out.
You've been back in Memphis now for roughly a week or something.
About a week.
Have you gone out of your way to eat anywhere in particular?
Not as much as I did the last time I came back. My first meal back, like, to go out and eat, you know, on purpose, was I stopped at Los Picosos on Summer and got the Pollo El Caban, the smoked chicken platter, which they do. They used to be only a weekend special. Now I think it's available all the time.
Really
like that meal, so I did that. You know, I went to see a movie yesterday, and afterwards I went set the bar at Huey's and had a smoky melt and read my book. That was nice.
Smoky melt has barbecue sauce on it? What makes it a smoky melt?
No, it's smoked cheddar. So it's a patty melt with smoked cheddar. That's my I used to joke when I was at the Memphis Flyer, instead of best burger, because Huey's always won, we should change the category to best Huey burger. And my vote is the smoky melt. Yeah.
The smoky melt. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Got good news, folks. The over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, the Santa surplus sale is ongoing. It ends tomorrow. So if you've got Valentine's Day coming up, and we all do, or you're thinking about getting engaged, or you've got a gift you're thinking about for someone, you got massive savings, post-Christmas savings. Save 30 to 70% on designer engagement rings, up to 50% off diamond stud earrings, 40% off stunning gold chains and bracelets. Savings throughout the store. It is the Santa surplus sale at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Again, it ends tomorrow. So get in there today or tomorrow. Take advantage of the best prices. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations are online at rijewelers.com. Going to take a break. Talk football with my son Peter when we return. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Top Sirloin Steak, $4.99 per pound. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Exclusive digital deal of the week. Lucerne shredded, sliced, or chunk cheese, 6.84 to 8 ounce varieties, $1.97 each. Limit 4 items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Still cold, Jeffrey. Can we report that it's still cold? I think it's still cold, although a little better. A little better. Just enough better that you can want to leave your house and get yourself to Oak Hall today, tomorrow, for the semi-annual sale. Savings now up to 70%. 50 to 70% off on fall and winter merchandise throughout the store. Yeah, the best savings of the year. Same fabulous people, same beautiful clothes, only better prices. In fact, my next guest, Peter Calkins, my son. Peter, you've been to Oak Hall, haven't you?
Yeah, wonderful store.
Wonderful store. Good stuff, right? Wouldn't you say? Some of your best.
Great clothes, comfortable, you know.
Clothes, helpful people. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the best prices of the year. I'm now dragging Peter into it, but I knew what he'd say because I knew what his experience has been. It's the semi-annual sale at Oak Hall. So, Peter, I'm partly having you on today because you're smart and thoughtful and all that, but also because we had you on last week to talk about the Grizzlies and the Bills won. And I don't want to mess with success, so I hate to say this. I'm partly bringing you back just as a good luck charm. But before we embark on our analysis of this week's game against the Chiefs, some people don't quite believe that I don't watch the Bills. Explain to them what it's like to watch me watch. What was my experience of watching that Chiefs game last night? Last week.
The Ravens
game last week, yeah.
Well, I watched it alone. I was at home, you know.
You watched it alone.
And I watched it alone. So that's one thing. But, you know, for the few moments, I think you watched the first drive, and that was about it. You know, a lot of cursing, a lot of yelling, a lot of stress.
And then I check in with you on what's happening, right?
I gave my dad the play-by-play. Well, the thing is, at one point, you told me to stop giving you updates.
That's true. I couldn't bear it.
You didn't even
want
to know secondhand. It was one thing to, you know, not watch, but you didn't even want to know what was happening until it was all over. But yeah, I did give you updates
at halftime.
The game,
you gave me a halftime update. You said things are looking great, and then I ask you for elaborate. It's an insanity. It's pure insanity that I care that much. Were you? Now, you have inherited some of the sincerity, but not all of it. How did you bear up during the second half and that last drive in particular?
Oh, it was tough. I mean, it really looked like they were going to blow it. You kind of just try to, like, disassociate. Like, you just, you know, you don't think about the fact that, like, you know, if they blow this game, I'm going to have to delete social media for the next week. I'm going to have to go into hiding. You just think about, like, you know, whatever happens, happens.
It's fine.
You put yourself at the mercy of the football gods.
Okay, your analysis of that game, by the way, what it struck me, as sports fans were perpetually offended, I don't think the Bills got a lot of credit for that win. I think fundamentally it was like, if Mark Andrews hadn't dropped that pass, they were going to lose. And Lamar's great. He delivered into Mark Andrews' breadbasket. And I felt like he got off easy as compared to Josh would have had Josh lost, because we're defensive about our teams. And I don't think the Bills got much credit for the win. Do you disagree?
I mean, I think you're right. I mean, this defense has been, you know, people have been kind of trashing it for a while, and like they forced three turnovers. I mean, none of those were like those were all like they kind of did something defensively. I mean, obviously, especially that little peanut punch on Mark Andrews with the fumble. That was all the defense. That wasn't like a mistake. That was just a great defensive play. So I do think they, you know, deserve more credit. And offensively, they were moving the ball. You know, whenever the game was close, they moved the ball. The only stretch where they didn't move the ball was opening up that third quarter where they kind of had a massive lead and they were maybe being a little too conservative, trying to, you know,
they did exactly what you told me you were worried that they would do, which they did not let Josh go out and win the game. They just sort of they tucked in their tails and by the way, on the defense, because I have mixed feelings about this. One of the things we know is that, just generally speaking, if you're a team that turns people over one year, there's no, like, it doesn't seem, it always regresses
noisy
to the mean, right? It's noisy, it's a stat that, and you can't count on it the next game just because you had it. Well, that seems to be what people say about turnovers generally. And yet this Bills defense has the longest streak ever of not having a negative turnover ratio. That they have, what is 21 straight games, I think, where they have not lost their turnover.
Probably what, dates back to the Jets game last year?
It probably dates back to the Jets game last year. Yeah, that's probably true, the Jets opener. So, the longest streak ever. Is that something you can, quote-unquote, that you can rely on if you are a Bills follower, or is that just a good streak of flipping a coin and having it come up heads every single time?
I mean, in a way, it's both, because turnovers are kind of inherently, okay, you had two and we had none. That's in terms of, you know, that's only two plays, right, that we're looking at, but that have a huge impact in the game. So even if you're consistently winning the turnover, you know, battle or not losing it, there's a big difference between you each turn the ball over once versus they did it three times and you did it zero. So it's going to be noisy and it's not going to affect every game the same, but I do think it's something you can count on in that you're more likely to have a game where you turn the other team over three times and they kind of blow it that way, then that happening to you, which is kind of, you know, ironic, because I think maybe there are times in the past where you felt the opposite was true with this Bills team, and specifically, you know, this Bills offense, Josh Allen, whatever. And so I do think you can look at that as, like, if they lose this game, it's unlikely to be because, you know, Josh Allen threw two picks and James Cook had a fumble and the Chiefs were clean. Like, that's not going to be how they lose. And while it's probably not going to be how they win, the inverse of that, right, the Chiefs turning it over, it's at least, it's more likely to win them the game than lose it, right?
It's funny because John Martin, I heard him, I was driving around the other day, and he said he's quite confident that the Bills may be different, the Bills may be changed, Josh Allen may not have lateraled that ball when he was stuffed at the goal line, even though he was inclined to, all of that. He said, I know what's going to happen against the Chiefs. Is they're going to lose because Josh throws an interception?
Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, even if you think they're going to lose, the story of this team in the playoffs has not been Josh meltdown disaster games. The story of this team in the playoffs has been the defense can't get a stop, right, against the Chiefs, right? So in 13 seconds, they can't stop them from scoring. That's the story of their playoff failures against the Chiefs, right? The Chiefs' offense last year didn't really have that great of a run in the playoffs. Their best game offensively was against the Bills, and the Bills' offense was the best offense against a great Chiefs defense last year. So I think the idea that that's how they're going to lose is, you know, Josh throwing a stupid pick. It's just not, you know, historically accurate at all. That's, I understand the narrative, Josh is a turnover machine, they can't beat the Chiefs. You put those two things together. But the reality is that's not how they're losing to the Chiefs. They're losing to the Chiefs because they can't get stops.
It's interesting you say that. So I was looking at Josh's career playoff stats. In regular season, pass yardage per game, 289, playoffs, 280. So basically just about the same. Completion percentage, regular season, 66.6%, playoffs better, 67%. EPA per pass, though, regular season, 0.25, playoffs, 0.26. He's been better in the playoffs than he has been in the regular season over the course of his career. But here's the thing, is Mahomes is dramatically better against Buffalo than anyone else he's ever played. He's averaged 306 passing yards in these playoff games, 75.2% completion percentage, 8 passing touchdowns, zero interceptions, and his EPA per pass, 0.47. It's double what it is. He's killed them.
That's exactly right. That, I mean, you couldn't be more spot on there. If you actually watched all these games and watched us, you know, get ripped apart and our hearts smashed, it's all Mahomes just shredding this Buffalo defense, which, you know, historically has been pretty good over the last 3 years.
Against other teams, and it's honestly, it's not better this year. Like, it's not, in fact, it's been worse this year in some ways.
Yes.
Like, it's been, the defense is worse. Now, it's not worse than
don't get pressure as much this
year. They don't get as much pressure this year. They don't have the safeties that they had last year. Now, they're not missing the linebackers that they were missing last year because of injury, which tore them up. Jeffrey, what do you think of this discussion? Weigh in.
So, I kind of think it's really keep it simple. I think these two teams are pretty even. I mean, you can find certain things about the Chiefs that maybe you like better. You can find certain things about the Bills that you like better. So I just kind of look at it this way. This is largely a coin flip game. And while these two teams have been very similar, there's one key number that really stands out. The Chiefs have not been very good in the red zone this year. They are 24th in the league in converting red zone possessions into touchdowns. The Bills were second. I just kind of think this is a close game. Give me the team that I trust more in the red zone, because oftentimes in these types of games, that's what it kind of boils down to. Even if you want to use the last year's game, like, the key difference was the Bills didn't score every time they got in the red zone. They had to settle for a couple of field goals, whereas the Chiefs just kept scoring touchdowns.
I guess I would say that they are two very evenly matched teams. One always wins in the playoffs.
What
so
truly
I'll pick
scares
that
me, and Peter, I don't know if you felt the same way. Last week, I felt like Josh was doing a ton at the line of scrimmage, where getting them into the right run, and it was basically like right as the play clock's expiring. What does concern me a little bit is he's not going to be able to get them in the right play in Arrowhead as frequently as he did last week.
I mean, I think it's a real concern. I also think, I mean, this team, you know, I think Joe Brady really likes to win with, you know, scheme. He likes to win with, we got the right call against your defense. He likes to win with screens and, you know, calling the right run play and stuff like that. And I think the other thing that, you know, I think if you win this game, you kind of want to win or lose by Josh Allen. You know, the guy who at least should have been the NFL MVP. And it's funny, when they played earlier in the season, this team obviously all year has been, you know, a very good rushing offense. They've been very good on first down, getting into third and manageable. When they played the Chiefs this year, you know, James Cook averaged like 1.9 yards per touch. They faced, you know, 15 third downs. They converted 10 of them, or 9 of them. And 10 of those 15 third downs were third and 7+. So that was the recipe in the game earlier this year, was Josh Allen bailing them out on third and long. And so if that's going to be how you're going to win, is Josh has to convert on third down, well, I'd like to see him get some chances on first down to be a hero too.
Eric Wood, the Bills analyst, who's a longtime center, he made the point that you made, Jeffrey, is that it's going to be really hard for him to operate just mechanically at the line of scrimmage. Peter, while I have you here, and are you going to watch this alone? Now you're back in Durham. Are you going to watch this alone this time, or are you going to watch it with friends?
Oh, I'm definitely not going to watch it with friends because they don't understand the sickness. But I might. I mean, there's a lot of Bills fans in the area, and it's something you know,
probably
just,
a Bills
walking
bar.
Around town.
Yeah,
so like I inadvertently ended up. I was watching the game with my friends a few years ago, the 13-second game at a bar, and it just so happened that there were like everyone there was a Bills fan anyway.
Yeah, so you could do that. Okay. Well, I did want to also get your continuing update on your jihad against Zach Edey. Okay, that's overstating it. You're just not necessarily a believer that he is what they need in this season. You stated that a week ago. Has anything changed in the last week to give you greater confidence in Zach Edey?
I mean they've had a good week, obviously, and I mean, he's played those games. And I mean, it's kind of interesting because there's nothing
those games.
Uh-huh. There's nothing in the numbers that really tell you that he stinks, right? When he's in the court, they're beating teams by 9 points per 100 possessions. That's an incredible number. That's 1 point better than when he's off the court. His box numbers are fine. I just watch him, and I'm like, this guy cannot play. I just imagine him in the playoffs trying to guard, some of these other guys, like trying to, guard Jokic as he's up-faking him into oblivion, having him switched on to Jamal Murray or Luka Doncic. How are you going to hide him and pick and roll with Luka and Kyrie on the other side? And I'm like, this guy is absolute barbecue chicken. And then offensively, he just isn't enough of a problem. Like a lot of these games, it's like 11 rebounds, 4 points. That's not good enough, So I think in terms of just being a guy you can throw out there in the regular season and you can feel good about his minutes, that's fine. I think it's clear he's passed that test. As a guy who you're going to rely on in the playoffs, I still think he just absolutely does not cut it.
Peter, thanks for joining us. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Jeffrey, you think that was good enough? Think it was that put us over the top?
Yeah, the only other thing I'd add is what also standing out to me, and again, we've only seen the Chiefs one game this playoffs, but I get the sense Mahomes still only trusts one guy in the passing game, and it's Kelce. And last year, Kelce absolutely crushed them, and there's like no getting around it, but there's Milano back this year. Do we have the injury report on Johnson?
On Taron Johnson? I think he's going to play.
I mean, to me, like, that's if you can take away him.
I think Taylor Rapp is maybe not, and Taron Johnson is, as last I checked. Anyway, yeah. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. George is going to be with them today producing the program. They will have more on the lineup. Anthony Sain's out sick today. Tim Murray will join me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Blake Topmeyer will join us during the first hour. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
We got a busy time at FedEx Forum this weekend. Make sure you get down there. Pelicans tonight, then the Jazz, and then massive game against UAB.
Stripe out.
Tigers need you for that stripe out. And so make a point of being there. We will be back Monday. We're out of here. Stay warm for now. Work is done.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.